Welcome, welcome, welcome. Season 3, Episode 1, Learning Leverage Podcast. We got two honorable black men talking foreclosure, man. Let's get into it.
I've become very attractive. Yeah. Right now, like the fact that it was the state capital, right? It has a train system. It's a 20-minute train ride, less than 20 minutes to Philadelphia. It has a waterfront, but it was just an old town, full of bricks. Brownstones woke up, and I just knew that shit would be coming back.
Okay. Well, now, could you explain some strategies you use to find these good foreclosure deals?
I go on Auction.com, Hubzu.com. I spend a lot of time chasing what I call list pendings. These are the foreclosure listings that come straight from the county courthouse. I basically have a team knock on doors, and it's always with the intention of seeing what we can do to help first. So you're gonna find out 90% of the people are not gonna qualify for a modification, but they might qualify for a short sale. And the one thing I'm able to do with a short sale is, most of the time the bank, I'm able to arrange the seller to receive something back at closing. So those are some of the best ways to do it.
Explain to us what a short sale is for those who don't know.
That's when you have a person that's undergoing foreclosure. They got caught behind their payment and they're asking the bank, can they sell the property and entertain offers on the property for less than what they owe.
And the banks usually go for it?
It depends. Is it a competitive offer?
Now, what are some tips to kind of recognize homes that are going through pre-foreclosures? Is it uncut grass, or how would you notice it? Like you said, I know you said the list pendants. That's the court records, but are there any other ways?
That's a very good question. I tell people the court records are fact. A lot of times, we're all worried about getting everything digital, right? I still get the paper newspaper because legally, banks still have to print the notice of team owner, anything like that. So I like to print paper still. But also, some people like the uncut grass, they see a pile of newspapers or a pile of mail, you know, all those factors. You know, you might see an house boarded up. It doesn't mean the bank owns it. I mean, that property can still be owned by the owner of the property. So you really have to investigate the situation of where a homeowner or a property owner is at before you can actually say it's a short sale.
I had a question.
Go ahead, bro.
So back to piggybacking off my last question. So this is all public information. Everybody in the world that's doing the physical knows that COVID is done and all the government restrictions are out of here. So wouldn't that create more competition for the exact thing that we're trying to do right now?
When you say create more competition, as far as what? I'm asking.
As far as other investors, such as myself, you and Bruce, attacking the same side of the pond versus going the other side of the river.
Well, I'll tell you this. There's probably what? How many? What's the Dow Jones? What's the Nasdaq? There's investors investing every day. You know what I mean? Competition is good. That means product is moving. When you, if you show me something that you're moving product, Jones, so it lets me know. the market to open it up, right? But also lets me know that there's people out there hurting. So, and that's what it, and see, what I tell people is this. Some people, they go crazy when they see blood in the water, right? When I hear somebody, the number one pitch when I approach somebody for a short sale or in foreclosure, right? You know what I say to them? Some people like to say, I want to buy your house, right? I got a team that calls up, and their name, a company I founded, it's a non-profit, right? We don't have a 501c3, but we're just registered at the state of New Jersey as a not-for-profit, right? And it's called the New Jersey Homeowners Assistance Agency. We call a homeowner, how can we help? How can we help? See, people call, hey, Mr. Charles, I want to buy your house and see that you're behind in your book. First of all, they already heard that thing. How can I help you? My company received information from your mortgage company's attorney that I believe we can assist you. Your mortgage company attorney. Now, if you're doing your right research, you know the date their mortgage was started, you know who the mortgage company's attorney name is, and you're not lying. Because, like my man just said, it's all public record. So your mortgage company attorney did supply you with this information. So when you start throwing familiarities out to somebody, to Mr. Jones, they're more likely to deal with you because you're knowledgeable.
Marlene,
as to having someone just calling
you. Let me give a shout out to Marlene Jordan. Thanks for joining. Josie Davis is watching. Ruby Wilson. And like you said, Marlene Jordan said, more competition just means you have to step your game up and differentiate yourself. Very true.
I tell people that, you know, it's just, you gotta keep, in this business, you'll find out too is, some people, once they close one deal, they're gone, they're done.
That's a
big done.
Correct.
They're done.
Another question. So, this process is to a foreclosure, right? Pre-foreclosure, then the foreclosure, then the bank owns it. At which point of the three are the ones that you're targeting, or is it all three?
I'm targeting all three. I'm targeting all the way up until the sale date. You know what I mean? Because I happen to know that if I present a homeowner, right, they usually get, like in a sheriff's sale, they get two attorneys a lot of times, right, the homeowner, right? But in this day and age, right, if a homeowner goes to a judge with a contract, hey, I have somebody who's going to buy my property, da 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 da. And they got to go before the judge, even if they go before an emergent hearing, the day of the sale. And that judge will usually postpone it and give them at least 30 days and say, hey, listen, a lot of people don't realize that you can also vacate a sale after it's been sold by simply filing a bankruptcy. You can vacate within 10 days after the sale.
That's very good info to know. Let me write that down.
I tell people this all the time. One thing I've learned in real estate investing and in wholesaling, I've learned how to scale up, scale down, scale up, scale down, depending on the market.
Okay. Well, as my assistant has lined up, the next part is part three. I don't know if you got a copy of the script.
I do.
The game. Part three is the benefits of joint venture partnerships. Now, of course, we know what it is, and you mentioned it earlier in the wholesaling game, how it became mostly about joint ventures. But for people who are watching this that, you know, retire, train, and want to get in real estate, and really don't want to deal with the risk that we deal with, they just want to put their money in, can you kind of explain the benefits of joint venturing with, you know, professionals and experienced investors such as yourself?
I think it's a great way, if you're truly going to joint venture on some real estate investing things, that you have to set some parameters, right? Number one is this. This is how I treat myself as a wholesaler. I treat myself, I got a Wall Street background, I have different tiers, right? When I'm wholesaling and just putting in papers, I look at myself somewhat as a real estate trader, right? And one thing I know is this, is that the difference is being is this. You give me 100 grand to invest, right? I'm trying to show my client within 8%, 12% return within a short period of time. So I explain to them, hey, listen, we can joint venture on this. And they'll say to me, well, you're making 50 grand, right? Yes. And I'm giving you 12 grand back within 90 days, right? Here's the thing. Joint venture doesn't mean 50-50 partnership. Now, you want to be my 50-50 partner, write me a check for 100 grand because of my knowledge, right? That I'm able to do the things that we're all able to do. And then you bought into my company, and then I'm willing to share profits. Because a lot of people realize that's the setup in law firms, right? You make partner, partnership, you're writing a check to become an equity partner, depending on that law firm. You don't get partner status because you're hard work. You get partner status based on the volume of business you brought in, right? And based on your ability to write that check to become a partner in that firm. So there's different levels. So when someone says to me, hey, Bruce, I got this house, I'll put the money up, I'll do this. Okay, that's fine. But you know what? There's a syndication fee up front that I take off the top before we even do that partnership. So
I hope you guys are enjoying the content. They didn't have to do this again, so anything that's shared with me, I share with y'all.
If you're gonna finance the whole thing, fine. But for bringing the deal to light, hey, I'm getting a 15% override or a 10% override up front, then we become 50-50. Joint ventures are beautiful, but each joint venture should be deal specific. Shouldn't be just done, we did one deal together, all the other deals the same. You know, it depends on the numbers and everything going. Okay.
Got it.
And we have a clear outline of who's doing what and what it is. Like, I've had joint ventures where I told them, listen, I just want you to handle all the financing. And I like to do that sometimes with new investors because they get the experience of writing checks out who they have to go to. They're at the closing table, so they can't say, oh, he skimmed me off the top. You know what I mean? Or, I didn't know that I paid for that, you know? No. Let them hold that money in escrow with the title company or with a lawyer and let it be brought down. Because what I don't let anybody else do is, too, is tell me you have $100,000 to do the repairs on this deal, and I found out after we closed, you only got $50,000 because you weren't spending. No. Somebody reliable, somebody has to hold that money. And it doesn't have to be me. It has to be a fiduciary.
All right. Well, since we are live and this video is going to be up, let's scale it down a little bit on the JVs and kind of cover the way we met each other on those levels of joint ventures. If you remember back in 2017, it was a young lady named Crawford who actually needed some help. She came to me on Facebook, and I think, what did I post the deal and you seen it or something? Somehow me and you connected.
Yeah, you posted the deal like that. You had a deal in Jersey City.
Right.
And I saw it and I contacted you.
And true story, we made a deal and made money without no paperwork signed, a virtual handshake, without even knowing each other.
And I called you from the bank and said, hey, I need your wire to pay. You said, what? We closed?
I was still way behind the ears, man. I was shocked. I was like, oh, it worked.
But I'll give you credit. Because I remember what I said to you. I said, Jonah, listen. I've been doing this a long time. I'm going to prove to you, you can simplify this. Right, that deal comes straight to my company, right? I'll share the HUD with you. I'll tell you what I'm making. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you want. And I promise you, boy, yeah, I'll let you know who the lawyer was and everything, who was closing and everything, right? But if you trust me and piggyback it, and then it's not like we had an agreement where you said, hold this amount and escrow for me. You trusted me brother to brother to send you the money. And it worked out.
That's right.
It definitely worked out.
Closed that deal from my bedroom in Ohio, and it was in Jersey, in his neighborhood, without signing, no paperwork with him, trusted him.
Yep.
And I hope people learn, you know, I wouldn't recommend that.
Not yet, I wouldn't. but we had a certain amount of what it was, though. It was just, we had a need to wrap up our rapport for.
Right.
And we both felt comfortable. No, I don't advise that. Like, I tell people, people worry about these assignment deals and all that. I worry about tell people, they need to master what you call the addendum. An addendum to a contract where if you told me you had a deal and you were agreeing to get a $10,000 fee for me, a simple addendum signed between me and you to present to the title company, right? They're saying that out of my proceeds, I agree to give you $10,000. And once the title company acknowledges and seeing that, they're going to send you that money.
Oh, yeah.
They have to. Put,
oh, yeah.
And they're going to do that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people just do, they overdo the paperwork, you know? And, or they're afraid to give you information because, number one, they don't have the deal. You know, bad, my brother.
Yeah, I know you're trying to think of something.
Yeah.